I've been excited all week about the prospect of getting a visit again with Dr. Casey Nielsen, who had joined us earlier, well, late last year, I guess it was. He's the Associate Medical Director for SIH and our guest this morning. And by the way, that sounds like, first off, Casey, morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Yourself, Tom?
Good, good. You know, but, you know, and I read this Associate Medical Director, I think somebody might get the impression, oh, yeah, well, he's just an administrator, sits in the office. No, you're out there on the floor. You're out there in the trenches every day.
Absolutely. I work as an ER physician. That's my primary job.
I got to admit, I saw the numbers out of Williamson County yesterday afternoon. Well, actually, 719, I think it was last night, and I normally get those much earlier in the day. 159 new positive cases reported in Williamson County by Franklin Williamson by County Health yesterday evening.
Yeah, these numbers are definitely trending upwards. This was exactly what we were expecting. We were hoping it would not occur, but with the holidays having recently occurred, with many family visitations and gatherings occurring, this was expected. And so it is definitely going to be a trying time, but it's something that we're going to work and we're going to get through.
All right, now here's the other thing that I find interesting, because I look at the numbers every morning about 515, 520, and the numbers for hospitalizations are down. Heron Hospital, 17. Memorial Hospital, Carbondale, 10. The day before, Heron Hospital was at 21 and 12 in Memorial Hospital. And the day before that, 26 in Heron Hospital and 16. And the day before that, it was 39 in Heron Hospital. And I can't help but think that some of the treatments we have with the high positive case numbers, that some of the treatments we have are effective enough to be able to keep people out of beds and at home for their treatments. Am I misconstruing and putting these numbers together wrong?
No, I would say you're not, Tom. I would say in particular, there's one therapy that's out there that's called monoclonal antibody therapy. And what that is, a good therapy for people who do have COVID. It's really for a specific patient population, but it's for people who do have COVID, but they're doing relatively well. They're not that sick. They're not struggling to breathe. They don't have low oxygen levels. They don't need to be hospitalized, but they have risk factors to become very sick. And what this monoclonal antibody therapy can do is we can give it to these patients, and it's been shown that it makes it much less likely that they're going to have to show up to the emergency room or get admitted to the hospital. The numbers are that the patient population that does not receive this antibody therapy, 9% of those people end up having to go to the emergency room or get admitted to the hospital. The patients that actually receive this monoclonal antibody therapy, only 3% of that population had to come to the ER or get admitted. So down from 9 to 3%.
Okay, now
and I'd like to... Go ahead.
Yeah, and this is, Casey, when I listen to you think, I think of shifting number, and I hate to use the word game of inches when we're talking about human lives, because what we're talking about here is the difference between being in the hospital and not being in the hospital. But if you have these higher risk factors, you take that and you say, well, just round it off to 10%, okay? 10% fewer people in hospital beds. At the far end of that, when it comes to deaths, does that have a correlation of 10% fewer fatalities?
Well, that's a good question, and the numbers and the studies have not been completed for us to determine that definitively, but common sense would say that. And like you said, it's a game of inches at this point in time. Every person that we can help get healthy sooner, that we can keep out of the emergency room, that we can keep out of the hospital, it frees the resources in that bed for somebody who needs it.
Model?
And so... Go ahead.
No, I appreciate that. I'm sorry I didn't mean to interrupt you like that. Let's go back to this monoclonal antibodies. Because first off, do you have to harvest these from people who've already had, or is this laboratory created?
So this is interesting, and this is the point that I did want to touch upon so that people have a bit of an understanding of where this monoclonal antibody therapy came from and its background and how it works. So somebody early on in the pandemic, a couple of people got sick with COVID, but they fully recovered. And what we were able to do was harvest their antibodies against COVID in a laboratory, make them in these vast quantities, concentrate them, and put them in this bag of liquid, essentially. And the concept behind this and how this works is, for example, as I see COVID as coming into your body and declaring war on your body. So if somebody unsuspectingly declares war on the U.S., we can't just immediately go to the front lines and start fighting. We have to get our troops ready, we have to get our armaments ready, we have to build our weapons, and then we go fight the good fight. And that's what our immune system has to do as well. It takes a good 7 to 10 days after COVID invades your body for it to really mount a strong immune response that can fight COVID. The antibodies can come into your body, and I see them as somewhat, say, contractors, where they come into your body and they start the fight while your immune system is ramping up. They start to weaken COVID. They try to lessen the numbers of COVID so that whenever your immune system is ready and it's at its strongest, it can now go fight a weaker enemy. Less COVID, weaker COVID. All That's right. the concept behind it.
All right, monoclonal cavalry.
Exactly.
Right. And it's interesting because these proteins are made to mimic the immune system. And so we've made soldiers, we've cloned soldiers that are friendly to the body. All right, so we are seeing better, more effective treatments on a number of different fronts, but a lot of options here when it comes to the monoclonal antibodies. But there's also, I guess, a caveat to this, the way I see it, is whether you are physically capable of accepting this. Is there, there's a kind of a line there, isn't there, for when this is good and who it's good for?
Absolutely, and that's why it's so important that you contact your primary care physician and have that discussion. So once you test positive for COVID, and if you're concerned or interested in having this antibody therapy, what you want to do is you want to reach out to your doctor. You want to have that discussion with your doctor. You know, do I qualify for this? What are the risks to me? What are the benefits, the potential benefits for me? And then once you have that discussion and you want to move forward and you qualify, then your doctor can order it. And it's actually a very simple, convenient process. He will go ahead and, or she will go ahead and place that order. Then the SIH COVID Infusion Center, we have an infusion center specifically for this antibody therapy. They will contact you and say, hey, how does tomorrow at noon work? Okay, great. Why don't you show up tomorrow at noon? You get your infusion, you go home. It's that simple.
All right, since we're using military euphemisms, there's the old saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Not always. That, by the way, it's a nice euphemism, and it's very cute, but it doesn't always work this way. And the reason why I bring that up, that we're speaking with Dr. Casey Nelson, he's the Associate Medical Director for SIH, is that we have the vaccine out there as one of the soldiers in this fight, and we have monoclonal antibodies, but these two don't play well together.
Well, I would say that I wouldn't say that they don't play well together. I would say that they're fighting separate fights. They have different responsibilities, if you will. The monoclonal antibody therapy is for people who get infected with COVID. The idea behind the vaccine is to prevent people from getting infected with COVID in the first place.
Okay, that makes more sense to me, because I know that when you're if you've gotten the monoclonal treatment, that you have to wait before you can be vaccinated.
Yes. Yes, you do have to have a waiting period, but at the same time, you have just been infected with COVID, which should make you more likely to be able to hold off getting infected again, at least for a period of time, we believe somewhere between 3 and 6 months. So you have time to recover, and then you have time to still get the vaccine.
Okay. Now, here's another one. Before we went on the air, Casey made my day because he used the term light at the tunnel and vaccine, and I like hearing the term light at the end of the tunnel quite a lot, actually. You know, but at the other hand, well, since we're using military euphemisms, once again, there's PSYOPs, we'll call it, for lack of a better word. And that is, at this point, the PSYOP is acceptance of the vaccine, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that there has been some articles that have come out in the media recently, and this is something I really want to address with you today, is the articles regarding anaphylaxis in people who have received the COVID vaccine. So we have given the vaccine in this country to over 2 million people thus far. We have had 24 people get anaphylaxis in our country. So that is 0.0001% of the people who have received the vaccine, a tiny, minuscule amount, have gotten anaphylaxis. Now, with that being said, all of them have fully recovered. Also, I want to stress the point that they were not getting anaphylaxis to the COVID aspect of the vaccine. It's more to the other components of the vaccine. And typically, every person who has gotten anaphylaxis to the vaccine has a history of anaphylaxis or hypersensitivity. So they are already at risk to have a severe allergic reaction. So for the general population, this risk is minuscule to non-existent, and it should not be a reason for you to not get the vaccine.
It's interesting because when I was reading this, the report I read was on Tuesday evening, and they had this with the statistics at that time. 21 Americans had life-threatening, out of 2 million, 21 Americans had had life-threatening allergic reaction was the headline. And this was specifically, by the way, the Pfizer vaccine, which I think ties into Dr. Nelson's mention that it's not the vaccine, it's the medium, we'll call, for lack of a better word. 17 of those at 21, when we had 21 allergic reactions, 17 of them had a history of allergic reaction. 71% of those had that reaction within 15 minutes. And as Dr. Nelson also mentioned, the recovery. Now, I had seen a couple of doctors giving a speech that they were concerned about this, these proteins that were included in this, and I've seen several items, and I'm not sure whether now, after upon listening to them and hearing you, whether maybe they were talking about more about the medium than they were the vaccine. I'm not really sure.
Well, I think that they were probably talking about some of the components that are in the vaccine, but a couple of things that we do before anybody receives the vaccine is we walk you through a whole list of questions because we want to determine if you are at risk to have an allergic reaction. So we know that ahead of time before you get the shot, and then every single person who gets the shot, regardless of whether or not you're at risk, we watch you for a minimum of 15 minutes. We don't let you leave because we want to make sure you're okay and you're not having any reaction.
Right.
And so we are taking these precautions.
And at three out of 71%, I said, for within 15 minutes, you got the bases covered pretty well there, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dr. Casey Nelson, who's joining us this morning, this has been a long slog. You've got the PSYOPs, you've got the psychological aspects, you've got the vaccine on the horizon, we've perfected some treatments. We've seen some very high bed numbers. We're seeing high positive numbers in some counties here right now. But as we, Dr. Nelson kind of anticipated that Thanksgiving, holidays, New Year's. But going forward, it's the vaccine. And I've been doing a little math in my spare time, and I did this based on numbers after communicating with a hospital in Iowa and how they were doing the vaccinations. And I came up with that you can, with their numbers and seeing when they did and how many people they had to come through their line and they took time off for lunch and things like that, that one person can vaccinate about 17 people an hour is the number I've come up with. 17.2.
Yeah, and that would sound about right. And mind you, for example, at SIH, it takes a whole team to do this.
Right.
And so we have several people giving vaccines. We have people behind the scenes that are helping prepare the vaccine to give it. We have people that are checking you in. And so it does take a lot of manpower to do it, but we have the system in place to be able to give a large number of vaccines over the course of a single day, hundreds and hundreds of vaccines over a single day.
Right. In the demand yesterday, the governor of Illinois, in the press conference, press release yesterday, Dr. Nelson, let me see, I've got my notes here, so I don't want to misquote anybody. But basically, he says he demands the federal government release these new vaccines, and he's cooperating with the governors of a number of different states as well when it comes to saying, let's get this out here and done. I think it's Michigan, Wisconsin, a couple of others. So what's been your experience personally since the vaccine? And when I ask that question, I'm talking about the people and their reaction to receiving it and the prospects. What do they say to you? What are they saying when they get this and what their hopes are for the future? I'm curious.
Well, the way I look at it, and this kind of goes back a little bit to what you and I were discussing before we went on air, is I feel like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. For the past year, we have all had to make sacrifices. It has been so remarkably difficult. And I'm not just talking about the frontline workers. I'm talking about every one of us, every one of your listeners. We have had to forego spending time with our family, doing the activities that we love and we enjoy doing. And what the vaccine does is it gives us hope for the future. And what I am hoping is that within the next 6 months, we are going to be able to vaccinate everybody that we can. And if we can do that, we can go back to a normal life just like we had it a year ago. So there's light at the end of the tunnel, and it all depends on two things. It depends on, A, everybody getting vaccinated that qualifies to get vaccinated. So get vaccinated. And number two, in the meantime, wear a mask. Wear a mask. Those are the two things.
One of our listeners has just texted me a story about a doctor in Miami Beach, and I did read this last evening, works at the Mount Sinai Medical Center, received the vaccine, but whenever they said they didn't have a direct diagnosis, besides immune thrombocytopenia, which prevents blood from clotting after 2 weeks of treatment, so there was some reference to this as well. I saw this story last night, but I thought it was undecided on his cause of death. You see this?
Yeah, I did. I did review that article or that newspaper article, and it's thrombocytopenia. Now, as far as what can cause that, that's a good question. We can't say definitively by any stretch that this was due to the vaccine at this point in time. A lot more needs to be looked into before we can do that. But also keep in mind that every medication we have in our world, some people will have a reaction to. Some people will not be able to tolerate it. There's always a risk to any medication. The good news is the risk associated with the vaccine thus far has been shown to be minuscule, minute, and I want to stress that. And so I'm sure that we're seeing these newspaper articles in which one person out of millions is having an unusual reaction, but that should not deter the general population from getting this vaccine.
Right. If you take aspirin and give it to 500,000 people, somebody's going to get sick. Here's a question that just came in on the American Monument text line. I think this is a good question, Dr. Nelson. For Dr. Nelson, if we have alpha-gal from ticks, would the proteins in the vaccine cause us harm? From Deb from Carterville.
To be honest with you, I'm not familiar enough to be able to answer that question. And so I don't want to give any misinformation.
All right.
And I would say if you're concerned about this, I would definitely contact your primary care doctor and have that discussion with them, because they would know more about your medical history than I do.
All right. Hey, Dr. Nelson, I appreciate it. I kept you a little longer than I'm supposed to, but I appreciate every single minute.
Absolutely. In closing, I want to say, Tom, everybody, please get vaccinated. Please wear a mask. We're so close. There's light at the end of the tunnel. We're going to get there. We're going to do it together. Let's move forward.
About this mask thing, you got doctors at Stanford and Harvard said, don't wear the mask. They've said several times, do not work. What do you say to those people?
I say that they should not be given any platform to speak, especially to the public, because what they're saying is incorrect and it's misinformation.